as bribery and corruption charges dropped by the U.S. Department of Justice under questionable circumstances in April. Because of those charges, the New York City Campaign Finance Board denied Adams matching campaign funds. Adams is now suing to get those funds. Mayor Adams was accused last December by the Biden DOJ with taking campaign donations from foreign nationals and businessmen, allegedly using straw donors to make them appear as legitimate donations. He was also accused of doing favors in exchange for luxury travel and attempting to conceal those transactions. We reported in February that the DOJ dropped bribery and corruption charges against Adams after Adams visited Trump at Mar-a-Lago. An apparent Trump directive to drop the charges to the DOJ's Southern District of New York resulted in the resignations of 7 experienced prosecutors. As a result of the corruption charges and paperwork omissions, the New York Campaign Finance Board denied Adams $4 million in matching funds for his campaign from the state's taxpayer-funded campaign finance option. Now that the charges have been dropped, Politico reports that Adams is now suing the board to recover $3.4 million of those denied funds. The Campaign Finance Board will reportedly revisit Adams' eligibility for funding in July. Find our past reports on Adams at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
Now, let's get back to exciting Rafters baseball here on WFHR.
Three more outs is all that the Rafters need to win their second game in a row after claiming the second leg of the doubleheader last night. We're here on the road against the Lakeshore Chinooks, and Jafet Martinez back out to work on the mound with a chance for a 2-inning save. He came into the game in the 8th inning and retired 3 of the 4 batters he faced. The only other one was a base on balls as Owen DeShazo worked his way over to second, but that was it. First pitch here to Jacob Coase is inside for ball number 1. A 7-6 ball game. Rafters up in the bottom of the 9th. Coase, he is a left-handed batter. 1-for-4 on the game. Bats this one foul towards his own dugout. 1-1 the count. And Martinez continues to look strong as a Rafter, but he is facing what could be considered the heart of the order. For the Chinooks, 2-3-4 in their batting order. The 1-1 count. This one is ripped down the right field line. That gets on fair for a hit. He'll round first and head for second. Picked up in right field. The gun down to second is not going to be there in time. And it's a stand-up double, but, well, Coase was kind of limping into second base there. He made it safely and a leadoff double, but he might have to be taken out of the game depending on how he feels. Kind of looks like he pulled something there. So going to take some time to talk it over with him to see if he is all right. So the trainer's going out to check on him is, well, Jacob Coase, that's his second extra base hit of the game. He had a double in the 5th inning as well. Now 2-for-5 on the afternoon. And he has looked continually so great out there for the Chinooks and really big for them. And this is another close game for the Chinooks. And this season hasn't gone the way that they've wanted it to go. 0-6, but they've had a few games that they've really shown some strong assets. And so looking at them and looking at this past schedule, you don't want to write them off. They lost by 1 run on the road at Kalamazoo. They lost by 3 at home against Fond du Lac. Lost by 3 to Battle Creek. And they've been keeping these games relatively competitive. This one, obviously, a 1-run game and still looking for that first win of the season. It would be a huge opportunity to do it in front of the home crowd. And so a lot of pressure on the Rafters to keep the game where it's at. And Brody Rasmussen stepping into the batter's box. And Rasmussen, he's 3-for-4 on the game. I mentioned it earlier, maybe the hottest batter out here. He's scored 1 run and picked up an RBI, also has a stolen base. Runner on second base, nobody out. Jafet Martinez fires. This one's skied in the air towards down the left field line and should hit the concourse. It does, bouncing off the concrete high in the air and makes it an 0-1 count. Rasmussen, the center fielder. He had an RBI single his last time up. A single here, if it was to the outfield, would likely tie this game, but they just need a couple of sacrifices as well. That would do the trick. 7-6, the Rafters lead. This one is fouled back by Rasmussen. 0-2 count. Strikeout would be huge here for Wisconsin Rapids, especially considering who's at the plate. Jafet Martinez trying to stay strong up there. He looks back to second. Now comes home with it. This one is lifted out into left field. This one's back on the warning track. Left fielder giving it chase. You can kiss it goodbye. The Chinooks have just walked off the Wisconsin Rapids Rafters with a two-run shot by Brody Rasmussen. And that one was a moonshot out there. Rafters fought hard, but they can't win the first of two on the road against Lakeshore. What a way to finish the game. It was an exciting one, and the Rafters, they gave it all that they got. But the final score here, 8-7. The Chinooks win. Let's go ahead and get on with the post-game show, but we're going to go ahead and do that after we take a quick break. This is WFHR Wisconsin Rapids.
It's the Eco Minute, powered by Clean Wisconsin, your environmental voice since 1970. I'm Amy Berrio. Dismantling the IRA and other federal clean energy incentives will add a half a gigaton of greenhouse gas emissions by 2030. That's according to modeling from Princeton University. House Republicans passed aggressive cuts to clean energy incentives in their latest budget. The Senate is now considering the bill. The Public Service Commission of Wisconsin has given the green light for a major build-out of fossil fuel-burning power plants in Wisconsin. We Energies wants to build new gas plants and operate them for 30 years, largely to meet the needs of Microsoft's new AI data center. It's turtle nesting season, and the DNR is asking drivers to slow down on roads near wet areas, lakes, and rivers. Wisconsin's 11 turtle species lay eggs from late May through June, when you can often see them along roads and in yards. You can help keep them safe by being alert when driving through their habitat. For a deep dive into environmental issues, check out my Defender podcast at cleanwisconsin.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hear that? That's the sound of your life. Perfectly imperfect. Beating in rhythm to the world you've created. But every time you drive after drinking, the music gets drowned out. Your life sounds pretty great. Don't let a buzz ruin it. Buzz driving is drunk driving. Don't drive buzzed. A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Let's get back to the ballpark and more Wisconsin Rapids Rafters baseball on WFHR.
So the Rafters fall in the first game of a two-game series on the road against the Lakeshore Chinooks on a walk-off home run from Brody Rasmussen, who had four hits in the game today. 8-7 the final, and taking a look back on how it happened here on the post-game show on WFHR Wisconsin Rapids. The Rafters started off the game feeling pretty good. They were up 2-0 on the scoreboard. And then after the top of the first inning, the Chinooks added one run in the bottom of the frame thanks to an RBI double from Nate Gray. In the top of the second, Rafters aren't able to do anything. Bottom of the second comes, but the Rafters do the same thing, blanking the Chinooks. Well, top of the third comes around, and the Rafters, they're able to pick up one more on a sac fly from Pat Costin. So it's 3-1 then, and bottom of the third comes around. Another shutout frame from Anthony Mateo. Mateo had a great day today. He went five innings, allowing two runs in total. Both were earned, but overall, some good stuff from him. He only walked one batter as well. Very impressive. Fourth inning comes around, and in the top of the fourth, Rafters go down 1-2-3. In the bottom of the fourth, Mateo does allow an RBI double from Owen DeShazo, and that makes the game 3-2. And then in the top of the fifth inning, Rafters once again go down 1-2-3. That's because Aaron Robinson had checked into the game in the fourth inning. He had a phenomenal outing as a reliever for the Chinooks. And in the bottom of the fifth, well, the Rafters still able to hold the Chinooks. And Anthony Mateo finishes his night with a five-inning game. That was his last inning there in the fifth, and he got pulled in between innings. Top of the sixth comes around. Rafters can't get anything going, although they do get their first base runner of the game against Aaron Robinson. It was a single, but they leave him at first base. Then, bottom of the sixth comes around, and it's a three-run frame thanks to a three-run shot from DeShazzo, and Lakeshore takes a big 5-3 lead. Well, big being just the two runs, but it was a big momentum changer, I should say. In the seventh inning, the Rafters, they get a runner all the way over to third base, but they can't get him home to score as Brent Gallegos is stuck there on an inning-ending double play off the bat of Hiroto Kobayashi. In the bottom of the seventh, the lead extends even further with one more run coming around on an RBI single from Brody Rasmussen. It's 6-3. Top of the eighth, the Rafters explode for four runs. They take the lead 7-6 after an RBI single from pinch hitter Luke Skinner is followed up by a two RBI double from Royce Clayton and then an RBI single from Ashton Zacher. That was the four runs of the frame. So it's 7-6 at the middle of the eighth. Rafters turn to Jaffet Martinez, who blanks the Chinooks in the bottom of the eighth. And then in the top of the ninth, Rafters go down 1-2-3, up one run. Bottom of the ninth comes around. It's a double from Jacob Coase and a two-run shot from Brody Rasmussen. Final score, 8-7. They walk it off here at Mason Graham Field. And, man, it was a tough one. It was a tough loss for the Rafters. Looking back on the statistics, the biggest one, Noah Ruiz, 2-for-4 on the game with a walk. He reached base those three times. He was looking good out there. Outside of that, on the pitching side, Anthony Mateo, I already mentioned him. Jaffet Delgado was looking good up until the ninth inning, and then it just all broke in for him. And, well, that's about it for the game. The Rafters are going to have to fight back tomorrow. They've dropped to 2-5 on the season, whereas Lakeshore now improves to 1-6. They get their first win of the year and are going to aim to make it 2 tomorrow at 6:35 p.m. We're going to have pregame show at 6:20 here Central Time on WFHR, so hopefully you are tuned in for that. But until then, I do truly appreciate all the support, and we all do here with the Wisconsin Rapids Rafters. So for myself, Austin Thomas, and from the entire rest of the Wisconsin Rapids Rafters, thank you, and have a great rest of your night.
To make it clear, set a bottom line. Say that this is my bottom line, include Badger Care expansion and sufficient funding for public schools, child care, and common sense criminal justice reform does not build any more prisons, and say I will not sign a budget that doesn't do that, that he has to do that. Otherwise, he's allowing them to get a Republican budget where this should be a compromise act. So that's where we are. And as organizers, this is about power. So we're saying we'll be with the governor and stand behind him, all these people, Pat, but the governor needs to lead.
So if the governor were to threaten to or actually veto the whole bill, there are a couple of different ways you could go. Robert, I'll start with you and then Heather. And there is this notion that if the governor were to veto the whole thing, Republicans would just say, oh, yeah, well, then we just won't pass a budget at all. Everything will continue at the same level. It's not like government shuts down and there won't be any improvements in anything either. So is that the tactic that would keep Governor Evers and others from vetoing a bill in its entirety? And what's your answer to that potential?
It's very similar to what Chuck Schumer said when he crossed most other Democrats and voted for a Republican bill to keep the government open, which also put in place a whole lot of the changes Doge and Trump are illegitimately and illegally making. What we've seen from the Democrat grassroots, which is everyone is for democracy, not just Democrats, is that they expect leaders now to fight and to use all their leverage. And so I think it's a sign of weakness to say, oh, I couldn't veto the budget because it could put in place a worse budget. It has to be used as leverage to force a negotiation and to force public attention on these popular issues that the legislature is against and is trying to block, because then they face much more consequences at the ballot box, the only real Democratic accountability. The other thing, Pat, is, what I heard at the Capitol yesterday, they're talking about putting most of their budget in separate appropriations bills with no line item veto and putting forward only a base budget so they can avoid the governor's line item veto powers in a budget. So we're in a situation where they're playing hardball anyway and are acting against all previous norms. The governor has got to be willing to stand and fight. But part of this, Pat, is if he lays this bottom line, the public will know who is blocking fair funding for public schools, who is blocking healthcare for 90,000 more people and more, getting more money for doing that, childcare, which everyone needs and wants to. And so I think that that's the only thing that can work in a democracy, that signing a Republican budget and then declaring it some kind of victory actually harms the public understanding of what is really going on.
Heather, I feel like the sentiment for this really increased after this last go-round where the governor agreed to an increase in local aid and in funding for local schools, public schools, but the amount of money that went to the voucher program was immense and to some people didn't look like a compromise at all, and really has led to this notion of, you know, better to veto a bad budget than to try to fix it with partial vetoes. What are your thoughts on that, Heather?
Yeah, sorry.
That's okay.
It's getting ready for school time here. Sorry for the background noise.
That's all right.
Yeah, you're totally right, Pat. People were really confused by the budget deal that the governor worked out last time, because while he did arrange a deal that exchanged a much needed increase to the low revenue limit ceiling, he did so in return for what turned out to be the largest expansion to privatization programs that we've ever seen in one swoop. And so this massive increase to vouchers and independent charters was not matched by a massive increase to public school funding. We saw a little lift to the low revenue limit ceiling, which, though welcome, did not even get our low spending districts up to the state average. And we saw a budget ultimately passed that didn't even provide an inflationary increase to our public schools. In fact, about 40% of school districts received less state aid in the first year of that biennial budget than they had the previous year anyway. And so that's why we have seen a record number of districts have to go to referenda in the course of the past 2 years. 419 questions, I believe, is the final count. Keep in mind that we have 421 total districts. We've had districts that have had to go again and again to voters to ask to raise taxes on themselves because the state is not paying its share. And it's just an unsustainable cycle. And this cycle of going back to base, fighting for crumbs, not getting enough, going back to base, fighting for crumbs, not getting enough, just has to stop. That cycle is not going to stop itself. And as Robert said, now we're hearing about this other layer of political games playing on top of it. And we were just headed to the Capitol yesterday to say enough. Enough is enough. Do your job. Your job is to make sure that our public schools have the resources they need so that every kid's needs can be met. And you are not meeting that obligation right now. Do better.
On YouTube, Tony writes, I saw so many photos on Facebook from the Capitol yesterday. It was amazing. And I mentioned seeing, you know, Heather in photos along with some of the folks there. Robert, you mentioned all the people that were there as well, that this really has much more of a grassroots feel than, you know, so much of the AstroTurf stuff we saw from, you know, back in the days of, you know, the Tea Party and things like that. Between that and the pie chart, Robert, I mean, you completely feel the public sentiment shifting, and with fairer maps, non-gerrymandered maps, you've got to feel better about taking this kind of a message into the 2026 election cycle, not meaning to get ahead of myself.
I hope we can get a budget, right, Pat? So if the Republicans do the right thing, then they are in a better stance in the 2026 elections. But if they're going to do what they did before, we at least want to make it crystal clear that they did it and exactly what they did so they can be held accountable. That's the only way democracy works. Softening the edges doesn't work, Pat. But what our hope is that the governor will create a very difficult environment for them politically that will actually make them do the right thing and find common ground with Governor Evers on these issues, because as Heather says, we cannot continue this cycle over and over again. And in fact, Pat, with what the House did, the House of Representatives and their tax on Medicaid, they left the extra money for Medicaid expansion, but it sunsets the full amount, getting 95% of cover of it paid for by the federal government for 2 years, sunsets on January 1st, 2026. This is the last budget we can get the full Medicaid expansion amount. But education, school districts are at the breaking point with the referendums. Heather talks about this all the time.
Without a doubt. Head to the comment sections on Facebook and YouTube to see the links that they provided us where you can sign your name to a letter of support. Robert Craig from Citizen Action, Heather Dubois-Bornon from Wisconsin Public Education Network. Thanks so much, you guys. Appreciate all that you're doing. Earl Ingram
Thanks
coming
for having
up.
Us.
You bet. Earl Ingram coming up in our next hour, along with Dan Schaefer on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow is affiliated with the Civic Media Radio Network and airs on select Civic Media stations weekday mornings from 6 until 9. To learn more about this show and all of the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows. Locally grown radio, WFHR.
I'm the threat that's already inside the house. In the closet, under the bed, in the car. But I don't want your money or your TV. I can't be scared away or negotiated with. I'm patient and quiet. I don't sleep. You can't call the cops on me. You can't even see me. I'm the threat of family fire. And as long as your guns aren't stored securely, I'll be there. Protect your family. Secure all your guns. Learn how to make your home safer at endfamilyfire.org. That's endfamilyfire.org. A public service announcement brought to you by Brady and the Ad Council.
When it comes to making plans, you are the best. What about those round trips that you plan in advance, which are perfect on your way there and perfect on your way back? Or those meetings with friends for which you make a group chat 3 months before so that nobody or anything is missing? Or your daughter's first birthday party? You planned it with such dedication that instead of the first, it felt like our quinces. The same way you plan each detail for those moments. Start planning to protect you and your loved ones from a natural disaster. Sign up for local weather and emergency alerts. Prepare an emergency kit and make a family communications plan. Protecting your family is the best plan you can make. Get started at ready.gov/plan.
Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
The Todd Allbaugh Show.
Positive psychology coach Kira Sabin. It is great to have you back.
I love the idea of self-help, but there's also something called community help. We have become so divided. We've forgotten that our neighbor is really nice and makes.
Download the Civic Media app in the Google Play or Apple App Store and take us everywhere. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Next up on the Civic Media Spotlight, we head up to Green Bay for Mino and the Mayor. This week, Jim and John welcomed on Spencer Nolan Young, who's a fence painter for the Green Bay Packers. He talks all about his passions and his work around Lambeau Field and the Green Bay area.
Welcome back to Mino and the Mayor. A reminder, tomorrow is, of course, Free Ticket Friday. And starting on Monday, Scotty Summer is back. Your chance to win trips around Wisconsin in the Civic Media statewide contest. Back now to Mino and the Mayor this morning with Jim Schmidt and Connie Fellman.
All right. Welcome back, everybody. We are here with the guys from the dispensary. And
you guys look like you're having a little bit of laughter in there. And I feel like I'm left out in the studio. Over.
Well,
Connie, what were you laughing about?
Well, we're learning a lot.
Yeah, I'm sure you are.
We're learning a lot.
And we're buying a lot. So, yeah, these guys are great. The dispensary, we just got a nice text in here. Love the dispensary and everything they provide the customers. Super knowledgeable. I can vouch for that. And always there to answer any questions I may have. Isn't that nice? Mm-hmm.
That's live? That's a live comment?
He just sent that in. Somebody sent that in.
But Dalton, I believe.
We were just talking about how important Dalton. That is because of the misconception.
The dog.
But
thank you.
We're talking about how the stigma thing, and we're going to just clarify that. How much you can help with things besides, I don't know, getting high. That's not why you exist. You exist to help people with anxiety.
It's therapeutic, yeah.
Depression, sleep. Yeah. And that's cool stuff to get them in there. What is the most common that people come to see about?
I think there's a large range. I know that a lot, our whole entire customer base is 21 to 65 plus.
Mm-hmm. I've served a 95-year-old in Fredericksburg, Virginia.
Yeah. Yeah. Male and or whatever, you know, like all walks of life. And so you hear one of the most craziest stories that I remember is the first customers that I took, and there's a girl that had just broken up with her fiance or something came in, just losing it. It was very, very upset.
Emotionally distraught.
Emotionally distraught, and came to see us for just to chill out. I was like, okay, well, that's a good read. That's something to use, like, if you're going through something like that, all the way to what Jacoby said.
Cancer. So from heartbreak to cancer,
yeah,
to trouble sleeping,
yeah,
to even if you have bad blood pressure, my uncle Dennis back home can attest to this, that our Delta 10 line, and it's just a Delta 10, it's just a cannabinoid. Like Delta 9 is the main psychoactive cannabinoid for cannabis. Delta 10 is a little bit lesser psychoactive. However, it still has all the therapeutic properties. And if you have high blood pressure, Delta 10 is one of your best friends. Not saying it's a fix all be all.
Right.
But when my uncle consumes our Delta 10 edibles and does a reading, his readings are darn near perfect.
Wow. You know, I played with a drummer in a band one time, and he swore he always had to use cannabis oil on his wrists before any show we did. Is it
a little bit of carpal tunnel going on for him?
Yeah, and it helped.
And I drummed growing up in the Southern Baptist. Yeah, I'm a drummer myself.
I looked at that. Yeah, I noticed that.
I grew up playing drums in the Southern Baptist Church, and have since evolved now to rocking out in Brandon's garage with him and our other production assistants.
Doing Bobby Benton covers.
We're having a good time, and it's all under the fellowship of cannabis and good times that have been originated here in Green Bay. As a matter of fact, unlike a lot of companies that are nationwide and providing to a vast variety of folks, we're dialed in on the communities that we serve. Thus the work that we do, you know what I mean, in the communities by showing up to these events and whatnot and spreading the good word and breaking that stigma that's been held against cannabis now for thousands of years.
Yep.
What? Let's talk a little bit about the outreach. Do you go and give talks to organizations? Would you do that? I don't know about the Retired Men's Club, if that would be the place I'd start. But I just think there's a lot of groups. There's the Bayshore Bicycle Club. There's just Green Bay's got so many organizations and groups that, you know, I used to go to. And you can do maybe one a day, but you can for sure do one a week. And I'm just thinking if the outreach would help your business, your industry.
100%. Yes. I mean,
we should do more. We did one in Sheboygan, the yacht club.
Right.
Which was nice. It was a fun one. Our partner William, he does police stations.
That's cool.
Yeah,
I did one with him. Sat in with him in the Sheboygan one, and so we just go into a room and give some information. And
or even the 5K that happened the other day here in Green Bay. We sponsored that. We're out there giving good information nonetheless. Yeah.
And of course, you got the golf outing coming up. That's something that's kind of outreach for you guys too, right?
Green gives back.
Yeah. Let's talk about that.
Yeah.
Yeah. All of that is. So all of that is under the same umbrella as we're cannabis, we're this industry, right? But we're kind of silenced in what we can say. We can't promote ourselves 100% on traditional platforms.
Due to local and federal restrictions.
But we can't promote this golf party. I want to hear more about it. How do we sign up?
Yep, so Green Gives Back, June 23rd. It's I think we got about two spots left available. You guys are sponsoring it, one of the whole sponsors.
Yes, we are.
That's amazing. Thank you, guys.
If you're
a business owner out there,
you're more than welcome to submit a gift basket, and we can get your name recognized on some of our signage to contributing towards the players are going to be golfing their tail off that Monday.
Brown County Golf Course, nice. Yep, June 23rd, 10 a.m.
You guys are giving back to the community as well.
Yes, proceeds are going to Old Glory Honor Flight and Missions of Honor, which is the new, non-GWAD veterans, sort of the newer veterans that are coming up now.
That's right. And speaking of outreach, I'm glad you said that. I will be attending Vets with Nets next Friday, the America's largest veteran fishing event that happens right there at Detroit Beach Boat Club in Monroe, Michigan. I will be attending that personally and doing the outreach there, along with doing some fellowship and catching some massive walleyes with my grandfather.
Well, and you're saying veterans, you know, there's a lot of research showing that PTSD can be effectively treated with the help of some cannabis. Would you say so?
100%. The studies out there are confirming this left and right, and even more so than cannabis now. They're talking about mushrooms. They're talking about removing the psychoactive portion of LSD and doing that in UC Berkeley. But what we focus on is that therapy. You'd be surprised how many vets work for us as a veteran-owned company. Right. The whole headquarters building is basically vets.
One more time, the website, and that the golf outing is on the website as well.
Correct.
Okay, so
the d8dispensary.com.
All right, that's it. Guys, thanks for coming in. Thanks for what you're doing for the community, and you got a great future in front of you.
I mean, thank you for your time. And genuinely,
yeah, you guys very knowledgeable. All right, thanks for coming in. That's the dispensary. They got a lot going on. Get to their website. We're gonna be right back with Connie and the Mayor.
Mino and the Mayor is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs on WISS and WGBW weekday mornings from 6 until 9. To learn more about this show and all of Civic Media's programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR, Rapids Home for Mornings with Pat Kreitlow.
What is dedication?
The thing that drives me every day as a dad is Dariano. We call him Day-Day for short. Every day he...
CBS News Brief. Ukraine launched a large-scale drone attack deep into Russian territory that security officials claim destroyed 40 military bombers. The BBC's Paul Adams is in Kyiv.
Breathtaking in its scope. The Ukrainians say the damage done runs in excess of $2 billion.
Dozens of people have been killed after an attack near a food aid distribution center in the Gaza Strip. Reporter Linda Gradstein from Jerusalem.
Witnesses said Israeli troops fired on crowds about half a mile away from the aid site hours before the distribution took place.
The Israeli military is denying claims that its soldiers were involved. President Trump's top advisor, Commerce Secretary Howard Lutnick, tells Fox News that tariffs will remain.
Rest assured, tariffs are not going away.
In North Carolina, one person is dead and 12 others injured after a shooting at a house party. The FBI says it is assisting. No arrests have been made. CBS News Brief. I'm Matt Piper.
The Brewers sweep the Phillies. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with Sports Baseball. 10 days ago, when you saw the Brewers would be playing the Phillies in Philadelphia, you wondered if they could get one win during that series. Today, they swept the Phillies. The final score 5-2. Milwaukee down 2-1 in the game. Coming back in the seventh, they win all three games in Philadelphia. The Brewers have now won 7 in a row. The Phillies now in a 4-game losing streak. Their fans booing them after the game today at Citizens Bank Park. Pat Murphy.
Phillies fans are great. You know what I mean? And they're awesome. Anybody would love playing in front of these fans. You know what I mean? Because they're so passionate.
So the Brewers road trip continues. They head to Cincinnati to open up a series against the Reds tomorrow night. NFL, Packers resume their OTAs, organized team activity practices, this week in Green Bay. In golf, the final round today of the Women's U.S. Open in Erin Hills, just outside of Hartford, Wisconsin. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. Major Margaret Houlihan, also known as actress Loretta Swit, has passed away. Swift played the character, also known as Hot Lips, for the entire 11-year run of MASH. According to Deadline, she was nominated for an Emmy Award every year and won twice in 1980 and 1982. Swit passed away at her New York home from natural causes last Friday at the age of 87. Hot Lips and Frank, together again. More troubling news regarding Kevin Costner's too-long-to-say movie title and ridiculously long movie, also known as Horizon, An American Saga, Parts 1 and 2. Good grief. Last week, Costner was accused by a stunt person of sexual harassment, and now the production is being accused of not paying its costume fees. The United Costume Corporation is seeking $350,000 for unpaid fees, according to Variety. Just a word to the wise, to the Yellowstone star, those costumes may come in handy if creditors come knocking. For more showbiz fun, tune into Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You can't escape a traffic jam. Know what else you can't escape? Seasonal allergies.
And with your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. Tonight, partly cloudy, lows in the low 50s. Monday, some smoke and haze in the air, mostly sunny with highs in the low to mid 80s, a strong southwest wind. For Monday night, partly cloudy, mid 60s. Showers and storms are likely for Tuesday with highs in the upper 70s.
Currently, 75 degrees.
This is the chef of love, Chef Gennard, TV host and restaurateur. My grandparents harvested their land to sell food and shared its overflowing bounty with our community. Grandma said, for every yam we pick, we give one away. In the world they cultivated, I love preparing and eating dinner with my family on Sundays. When our resources changed, food assistance programs sustained us. They gave me fuel to start my first culinary business at 16 years old, and inspiration to donate the extra food in my community. Through my life, I've developed an appetite to work with others to ensure everyone has access to the nutritious food we need to thrive. Together, we can help end hunger. Come on, join the movement with Feeding America by volunteering, donating, and advocating. Learn more at feedingamerica.org/act now.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ag Council.
Maggie Dawn.
At 4:30, I'll be joined by senior ranking member of the state's Joint Finance Committee, Senator LaTanya Jackson, to talk about the Republicans' cuts that will affect you and yours.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekdays 4 till 6.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Welcome back to the Civic Media Spotlight. We go now to the Todd Alba Show. And this week, Todd welcomed on Lieutenant Governor Sarah Rodriguez, who is always traveling around the state to talk to Wisconsinites, and more importantly, to listen to them. She gives a great update on what she and the rest of the governor's team are working on to address the most important issues to Wisconsinites.
Pursuing truth wherever it may lead and having fun doing it. Welcome back to the Todd Alba Show across Wisconsin on the Civic Media Radio Network. Glad to have you along with us. 35 minutes past the hour of 2 o'clock on this Thursday, May 29th. Zommer's on the board. Glad to have him back. And also right now, joining us for this next segment once again, Wisconsin's Lieutenant Governor Sarah Rodriguez joins us via StreamYard on this, the state of Wisconsin's 177th birthday. Sean in Richland Center, listening on WRCE, says, I believe it was James Doty who bribed people to vote for Madison. Also think Madison beat out Cassville by one vote for being the state capital. Thank you, Sean. I think you're right about it. It was James Doty who did that, but I did not know that Cassville lost by one vote. As they say in the movie, just a bit outside. How about that, Lieutenant Governor? Had it not been for a bribe, you'd be, you know, meeting down in Belmont. You and I are one of our favorite places, Southwest Wisconsin.
There you go. Absolutely.
Again, you've been traveling around the state. And before the break there, just talking about that you were hearing from people, the anxiety of what's happening in Washington and how this lands back here at home in Wisconsin. And for some people, that's for the Medicaid cuts, Medicare. Explain just again how this works, because I know we've had, and I guess not just that, but another issue that I think is really important you can talk about if you'd like. We had people on this show here, Zommer's, a couple of weeks ago from Barron County that ran a child care center there. And they were down here lobbying the legislature for money because, as it turns out, child care in this state was already kind of in danger in terms of not being able to make it financially. Then the pandemic comes along. We get federal funding through for the pandemic COVID money from the feds. That is running out. And what we're hearing, and I'd be interested to hear what you've heard, Lieutenant Governor, is that a lot of places, particularly in rural Wisconsin, are saying, look, we can't charge what child care centers in Madison and Milwaukee do because our clients don't have that kind of income. And without some sort of state help, we're going to go out of business.
Yeah, I'm hearing that as well. And the governor we've included in our budget child care counts, which are dollars that can go towards these child care agencies that would be helpful and to be able to subsidize some of kind of middle income folks. So when I speak to some of the child care agencies, you know, the lower income folks who qualify for 100% subsidies, they're probably going to still be okay. The wealthier people, they could probably take a little bit of an increase in their child care costs. It's people like me, right? I'm a nurse. You know, I'm not wasn't a super wealthy person and not a super wealthy person now. Those are the kind of people who are going to suffer because they're not getting any subsidies from the state for their child care. And to be able to absorb that into a family budget, it is so expensive. Oh my gosh. Yeah. So expensive to be able to put your kids in childcare. And that is what I'm hearing from people, and that the spots just aren't available. And so some people had wanted to go back to work, but couldn't find a spot for their child. And so ended up staying at home until their child was 6 months, 9 months, a year, until they could get a childcare slot. It is a crisis in Wisconsin. Governor Evers and I, we have some really good pieces in the budget to be able to address this. We are working with the Republican Joint Finance Committee, and they have to know it's a crisis as well within their communities. So wanting to make sure that we keep that in the budget moving forward.
Before we get into the budget specifically, another program that I wanted to just highlight and get your take on as you've traveled around the state, Lieutenant Governor, is this issue of what's commonly known as food stamps. Now they're called SNAP benefits here in the state of Wisconsin. What are you hearing about this and these implications of what's happening in Washington, D.C. and how that transcends down to Wisconsin?
Well, and I will tell you that we had to put our budget together here in Wisconsin before we knew what type of cuts that the Republicans in Washington were going to be proposing. And so now we're having to play a little bit of catch up, just like businesses can't prepare and plan. You know, state governments can't prepare and plan if we have this level of chaos going on at the federal government. If the bill goes through as written through the House right now, that's an extra $350 million that is going to be hitting our taxpayers here in Wisconsin that we would have been able to get from the federal government that we didn't have time to prepare for. So, you know, that is something that we're going to have to figure out. Either we have to put in an additional $350 million into SNAP benefits, which is food, by the way. It is food for people. We don't want kids to go hungry. We don't want older adults to go hungry in Wisconsin. I know my neighbors don't want that, Republicans, Democrats. And we did not have a chance, or we have to restrict benefits. Those are the two choices that we have. Either we have to be able to put those dollars in, or we have to restrict benefits. And we certainly don't want to do either of those things. We want the federal government to continue to do what they've said they were going to do and match it at the same percentage.
Yeah. And just one more quick note on this, because my former party now, they like to spend a lot of time on, oh, geez, maybe we should decide what people are on SNAP are going to eat. Like, we don't want them to get candy bars or so. There's always going to be a case or two or three. And then those are just blown up as to, well, everybody's doing it, right? I mean, I remember when I was working for the state Senate and you know, I don't care anymore because I've long left politics. But in a closed Senate Republican caucus, then State Senator Glenn Grothman, now United States Congressman Glenn Grothman, spent 10 minutes talking about how he didn't think that people on SNAP should be able to buy Skittles. It got down. Well, you know, if they want to do it, they should do it, but not on taxpayer. But this is just a fallacy, is it not, Lieutenant Governor Rodriguez?
It is. And that's the thing that bothers me. You know, I'm a nurse by background and often work with vulnerable communities. What do the numbers say? What does the data say? The vast majority of food that is purchased is regular healthy food. I mean, that's what they're purchasing. They're not purchasing Skittles. They're not purchasing. Right. They could rarely do that. But here's what you're telling people. You can't get a birthday cake for your child. Mm-hmm. You can't throw a party and maybe get some cupcakes for the school. Mm-hmm. Like, are you kidding me? That's the level of micromanagement at what we're going to do to families who are just trying to get by and survive. I mean, come on. It's just absolutely silly.
It really is. Let's move on to the budget at large here. Of course, Wisconsin has a biennial budget, meaning it's every 2 years. And unlike Washington, D.C., if the legislature and the governor can't come to an agreement, we continue on current levels for another 2 years. People hope that that doesn't come to that. Help us sort this out, Lieutenant Governor Rodriguez. You know, you hear all kinds of different things. The Republican legislature, Speaker Voss and Majority Leader LeMahieu. Well, you know, the governor doesn't want to negotiate or sit down. The governor says he's waiting for Republicans to talk to him. Help real Wisconsin. I mean, I think most people, not political nerds like me, just say, look, you guys are elected to work this out. We have a $4 billion surplus. What gives? Give us the inside scoop, Lieutenant Governor.
Well, you know, it is frustrating. And they have been talking to each other. They've absolutely been talking to each other. So this narrative that the governor is not willing to come and discuss anything, it's simply not true. They've been having conversations and, you know, they want to make sure that they're having some of these lower level conversations before they bring in some of the decision makers on what they're going to do for some compromises on the budget. But the reality is that the Joint Finance Committee basically stripped down the governor's budget, which is what they call base budget. And then they're kind of adding pieces in here and there. But they, you know, they have control in that Joint Finance Committee, the Republicans do. But at the end of the day, they know that there are really important priorities for the governor, whether that's education. We know he's the education governor, whether that's healthcare, trying to bring in some additional revenue into the state, you know, making sure we can have appropriate funds for childcare. And I am hopeful that they are going to continue to have conversations in good faith, that they are going to produce a budget that the governor can sign. Because at the end of the day, he does have that line item veto power. He can do some of those pieces, but he also has the power to veto the entire budget if he chooses to. Mm-hmm. So these are the kind of things that we want to make sure doesn't happen. We want to have a budget on July 1st when it is required to be completed. July 1st. Mm-hmm. When it's required to be completed, that's what we want. I imagine that's what the Republicans want as well. So let's just get to work. I think you're right. When I talk to people all over the state, they're just like, we don't care. We just want you to work for the betterment of Wisconsinites. That's what we want. We're tired of the partisanship.
Is there anything to this that Republicans now are considering instead of doing what would be called an omnibus budget bill? That's political talk for putting everything in the same pot and passing it like we usually do, kind of breaking this out into individual bills to try to usurp the governor's veto pen? Or do you think that's just hyperbole and hype?
There's all sorts of rumors out there about what they're going to do, but they have to be able to be responsive to their voters in 2026 about why they didn't want to invest in childcare, why they didn't want to invest in healthcare, why they wanted to leave people hungry in schools. So I would very much hope that they are going to be working in good faith and that we can come to a compromise for July 1st.
One of those things in the budget, of course, is our state university system. There's a story on Channel 3000 this morning, a CBS affiliate here in Madison. UW-Madison campus leaders said today that they were ready to support students after U.S. Secretary of State Marco Rubio said the government would begin revoking the visas of some Chinese students. And then later on, it says, we are deeply concerned about the impact of such a policy on our Chinese student community, unquote, according to a UW statement. Lieutenant Governor Rodriguez, break this down for us a little bit. Because our university system, whether people like to know it or admit it or not, there is a business side to this. And foreign students pay more than Wisconsin in resident students. And if this were to go through, not only do I think it would degrade the university experience by not having another view in your colleagues or your classmates, but there's a real financial burden for the state of Wisconsin if this goes through as well.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. So if you think about it, in-state, out-of-state tuition, right? You know, I mean, we all know about that, that if you go to a different state, you're going to pay out-of-state tuition. And we know that that's more expensive. So when we have students from overseas who come into the UW system, which is a significant portion of our student body, I mean, I'm worried about those Chinese students as well and the community there and all international students. Mm-hmm. But the reality is the vast majority of them pay full fare.
Correct.
They pay 100% of the tuition. And so what happens is, if we lose those students, if we lose those international students, guess what? Wisconsinites in-state tuition is going to go up, because they're going to have to be able to still continue to provide the services that they have within the UW system with less money. So that is going to impact Wisconsin students as well. So even though you may think, I always say this, you may think these decisions that are happening in Washington, D.C. has nothing to do with what's happening in Madison or what's happening in Viroqua, Wisconsin. It is. There's all sorts of effects from these cuts and from these political decisions that are being made with no thought to what the consequences might be on the ground.
Lieutenant Governor Sarah Rodriguez, always appreciate your time. You are part of what makes Wisconsin great. We come back soon and we will talk more. We thank you very much for being here today.
Thank you so much. All right, bye-bye.
Our pleasure. Lieutenant Governor Sarah Rodriguez, when we come back, the 14 best places to live in Wisconsin. Stay with us.
The Todd Alba Show is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs across the network weekday afternoons from 2 until 4. To learn more about this show and all of the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows. As Wisconsin as a fish fry on a Friday night, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
My name is Ariel. When I arrived in the U.S. at 19, I struggled to find job opportunities without my high school diploma. My entire life changed when I took a chance and got my high school diploma at age 22. Everything I have, my education, my career, my marriage, I owe to the Adult Literacy Center and my teachers. They were with me every step of the way, helping with my English and math, making sure I push through all the challenges.
Ariel, your success proves that what I'm doing as a teacher has real meaning.
It was an honor helping you achieve your greatness. Now you're helping others achieve theirs. It inspires me.
Education was the key that unlocked all my opportunities.
When you graduate, they graduate. Find free and supportive adult education centers near you at finishyourdiploma.org. Brought to you by Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
I'm the threat that's already inside the house. In the closet, under the bed, in the car. But I don't want your money or your TV. I can't be scared away or negotiated with. I'm patient and quiet. I don't sleep. You can't call the cops on me. You can't even see me. I'm the threat of family fire. And as long as your guns aren't stored securely, I'll be there. Protect your family. Secure all your guns. Learn how to make your home safer at endfamilyfire.org. That's endfamilyfire.org. A public service announcement brought to you by Brady and the Ad Council.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow.
Hans Breitenmoser, we have people in Congress right now cutting food assistance.
All of it is a disregard for how the economy actually works. When you plant seeds in the ground, you get money close to the ground. That's what makes rural economies work. Urban economies are very similar in that regard. Washington is only as good as its participants, and we've got some real dandies there these days.
That's definitely one way to put it.
Catch Mornings with Pat Kreitlow at its new time, weekdays 6 to 9 on Civic Media and the Civic Media app. Amicus, a law review with Jim Santel.
The Trump administration arresting and deporting these supposed gang members without giving them due process is one of the steps to becoming an authoritarian government.
Dale, thank you so much for the call. And again, I second all of that. Bring them all back and afford them the due process that's a part of our nation, a part of this law, and a part of our tradition in administering justice.
Amicus, a law review with Jim Santel. Saturday mornings from 9 to 11. Connecting audiences, powering brands. This is Civic Media. Learn more at civicmedia.us/advertise.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Wrapping up the first hour of this week's Civic Media Spotlight, we go to Nightlight with Pete Schwabe. This week, the Schwabinator welcomed on Milwaukee film critic Matt Muller to the show, and Matt shares his favorite burger toppings on National Burger Day. Matt also shared his thoughts on the new movie, Mission Impossible, The Final Reckoning, the latest weekend movie success.
This is Nightlight. I am Pete Schwabe. Welcome back. It is a Wednesday night. We are broadcasting statewide from beautiful downtown Green Bay on a rainy night. But it's still beautiful. You know why? Because we're talking about movies and TV and comedy and music and all the things we love and that make life great. And part of... we're getting a little help tonight, too, from a very good friend of ours, Mr. Matt Miller, who is a Milwaukee-based film critic. And Matt, you got home safely. You're on the stream. We can see each other now. It's a real conversation. Awesome.
This is much better.
all right. I'm trying to so last weekend was record setting. I think I read something that said the last time all the films in one weekend made that much money was 2013. It made like $314 million. The films this past weekend made like $346 or $341. Is the box office back? And why is that? Is that because of the pandemic? We're finally starting to come out of that and the strikes, or what do you attribute that to?
You know, it's funny because just a month or two ago, everyone was having panic attacks.
Yeah.
The box office was doing really bad to start the year. And now we've had a very strong past 2 months between a Minecraft movie and Sinners obviously becoming this massive hit. Weirdly enough, the Marvel movies have not done that well. They've done fine enough, but they've flopped by Marvel movie standards. You had Final Destination becoming a gigantic smash hit, and obviously This past weekend, you had Lilo Stitch and Mission Impossible both performing really well. And I think part of it is people like going to the movies. You know, people like seeing a movie on a big screen. They like to get out of the house. They want to see something in a special way. That's part of it. A part of it, too, is Hollywood starting to make, and I know it's funny, in a weekend where one of the movies is a remake and one of the movies is a sequel, the eighth movie in a franchise. But they're starting to dabble in different areas. They're starting to try new things again. You've got stuff like Minecraft and Sinners. Minecraft, a movie that is directed to a younger generation and not a retread. It's not, right. You know, it's not a hand-me-down franchise. It is something that speaks to younger kids. Lilo and Stitch, yes, it's another live-action Disney remake, but it is nostalgia for a new generation. It's nostalgia for my generation and the Gen X and Gen Z and the millennial generation. They're starting to realize that, you know, 80s nostalgia and kind of, you know, the old standbys, culture has changed a little bit. And I do think there's a turn back against the slopification of Hollywood, the idea of these movies that exist just because stakeholders at the studio say they must exist. Mm. You know, Sinners is doing well because it's a really good movie and because it feels like something a director really wanted to make.
Yeah.
It had passion behind it. A lot of the reason I've talked about this, Barbenheimer, directed by, you know, a bunch of nobodies, isn't a phenomenon. Oppenheimer, directed by Christopher Nolan and Greta Gerwig, two auteurs who really wanted to do something and say something with these topics, those are hits.
So I
think we're in this era now where people, you know, a lot of, you know, name brand movies will still do well. I'm sure Superman will do well and Fantastic Four and Jurassic World will do well. But there is a craving for new things, for things that feel unique and different and feel like something we haven't seen before. And again, I know that's very silly to say in a weekend where Lilo and Stitch Take Two made, you know, $150 million in America, but at least that is a new sense of nostalgia on some level. That is a new generation. We're not just retreading the 70s and 80s one more time.
It's crazy that, and to your point about going to the theater, you know, one of the complaints, going back to Mission Impossible, my dad had when we left, we went with a huge group on Sunday. He said that plane scene went on too long and so did the water. He loved it, but he said those should have been cut. I'm like, Dad, that is why people go. They're a little full of themselves.
That's a wild opinion. I'm sorry. To come out of Mission Impossible, The Final Reckoning, and be like, the set pieces have to go is
Not to go, but to shorten them. And I'm like, first of all, as a filmmaker with a ton of juice, that you can stand up and say, no, we're not cutting that down or we're not editing that because I have the power to keep it and we're keeping it. And they're in love with what they did because they should be, because it was unbelievable. That is why you see those movies on a big screen. So I don't disagree that it could have been a few minutes shorter, but I'm fine with it the way they did it. It was so much fun.
That's not the part I'd be cutting. That's not the part. I'd be taking the scissors to.
cut the first part out like we talked about. So Hollywood is, I read this yesterday, I think it was in Variety, anticipating a $4.2 billion summer. That was the other reason I wanted to ask you, is the box office back or are they back? The movies are really good. Like you said, you've got Sinners by Ryan Coogler, a guy who had the power to get the movie made that he wanted to get made, and it was in wide release. You know, most of those are franchise films or Marvel. Or a director like Christopher Nolan has the power to get them made. I wish there were more of those guys, those auteurs, like you say.
Yeah, right now, the last time the box office grossed over $10 billion in America was 2019. We haven't grossed that much since then. This year is really steadily going in the right direction, and it's moving right. I don't know if we'll ever get to those kind of insane highs from the 2010s, just because like streaming was still kind of, you know, not entirely in the mix back then. There is still a crowd of people that doesn't go to the movies as much as they used to. Frankly, it's a lot of older audiences. I know a lot of people like to blame young people for, you know, being on TikTok and being on YouTube.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR. Jay Matt Nair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, America's credit has been downgraded. What does that mean for Wisconsinites? Hour number two, we go beyond the cheese. Don't miss it.
Matt Nair on air, weekday mornings 9 to 11. The Todd Alba Show.
We are not perfect here at Civic Media. Far be it. Certainly not perfect at this show. But one thing I can assure you of, our owner that I can see right through this glass right now, Sage Wine, has never once told me what to say and encourages us to speak the truth. And that's why, above all else, I'm proud to work for this company. And along with my colleagues, we will bring you what's really happening out there. And if we get it wrong along the way, we'll admit to that and correct ourselves as well.
Catch the Todd Alba Show at its new time. Nightlight weekdays 2 to 4 part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs across the network weekdays from 6 until 8 p.m. To learn more about this show and all of the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows. This is locally grown radio. WFHR 1320 AM, W248DE Wisconsin Rapids, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Matt Piper. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky calls it the longest range operation ever. Ukraine conducted a massive drone attack deep into Russia, targeting its military air bases. As the BBC's Paul Adams reports, it involved the smuggling of drones.
Swarms of drones picked up on social media videos from Siberia to the Arctic Circle. In one, filmed at a petrol station north of Irkutsk, drones can clearly be seen taking off from a parked truck. With smoke rising from bases across Russia, Ukrainian sources said they had done $2 billion worth of damage.
Ahead of Ukraine peace talks tomorrow, Russian and U.S. diplomatic chiefs have spoken by phone today. Larry Korb is a former assistant secretary of defense.
There's no doubt that Russia will try and respond because not only does it hurt them militarily,